Hi, I'm Marion McPartland. Today we're celebrating the life and music of Dave McKenna, a guest who first appeared on Piano Jazz in 1979. And who better to help me pay tribute to Dave McKenna than pianist and singer Darryl Sherman, who was a friend of Dave's and a fellow Rhode Islander. It's all yours, Darryl.
Every state has something its Rotary Club can boast of. Some product that the state produces the most of. Rhode Island is little, but oh my, it has a product anyone would buy. We New Englanders, especially those of us from Little Rhodey, seem to have a special bond. No matter where else we settle, somehow we manage to stick together. We find each other, and we sure cheer our hometown heroes. Whether it's the Patriots, the Red Sox, Claiborne Pell, or indeed Dave McKenna. Critics, fans, and all the best musicians revere him as a world-class piano stylist of the highest order. But when Dave toured in the 50s with Krupa, Art Tatum would come to hear him and tell everybody he's the future of jazz piano. I think Dave McKenna is the history of jazz piano, and he's an original. Definitely a one-of-a-kind guy, as you'll hear, both musically and from his persona. It's so hard to speak of him in the past tense. We recently lost him, but lucky for us, there is a treasure trove of recordings on a variety of labels like Concord. And no small thanks to Marion McPartland. There are two really, really great piano jazz programs. Both Dave and Marion have long been heroes of mine. But I really didn't think that this guy from a mill town called Woonsocket, which is my birthplace as well, and a girl from Windsor, England, would have so much to talk about. Especially since McKenna is known to be a man of few words.
I remember you're from Rhode Island, aren't you? Where?
Woonsocket, Rhode Island, Marion.
Oh, I love that. I love that name. Wasn't there a song called...
Buckle Down Woonsocket, but that's spelled W-I-N-S-O-C-K-I, and my town is W-O-O-N-S-O-C-K-E-T.
See, what an ignorant Brit I am. I didn't even know that. I thought it was all the same thing. But anyway, now, where did you start to play? Were you just sort of an instant player at the piano by ear, or did your mother play or what?
Oh, yeah, my mother was a fine musician. She played classical violin, and she played nice piano. She read, sight-read beautifully, which I never learned to do. And she studied from a member of the symphony. She's from Boston. But on the piano, her technique wasn't as good as it was on the violin, but on the piano, she loved to play the tunes of the day. And I used to hear her playing like Smoke Gets in Your Eyes and Stormy Weather. And she played with excellent taste. She had a nice touch, and she played nice chords. I wouldn't call Mama a jazz player because she didn't play, she didn't improvise much, but she put in little things here and there. And she had, like I say, she played those tunes so well. But I think that the first thing I heard was little jingles on the radio. I mean, the radio band. And I went to the piano and picked it out, you know, so. And then I started playing the tunes I heard her play. And she said I played them pretty accurately, right.
How old were you then?
I don't know, 6 or 7. And then she sent me, I went to a Catholic school, and she didn't think she was a good teacher, so she sent me to the nuns. And the nuns were nice old ladies, but I hated those lessons, and I hated trying to play scales, and I hated those kids' pieces, and I hated piano lessons.
Well, I don't know. There's so many. I'm just sort of thinking of all these things. We were talking about your early days in Woonsocket, and you never mentioned your dad.
He was a postman.
Was he really?
He played the drums, and he played good military snare drums. He played in the marching bands in Woonsocket. And toward the end there was only one of that type of band that played concerts and the band shells, and they marched and parades. And it was the Sons of Italy band. So he was a snare drummer in that band. And he could roll with a knife and fork on the table. I mean, he was good at what he did. And he liked Sousa marches, of course. And, you know, I used to sort of make fun of them, not to his face, of course, but the old man was still the boss. But I hear a Sousa march now, and the way they're put together, they're very good, very musical. Right.
Et cetera, et cetera.
Yep.
Well, I know it's not really the same thing, but because you have such a wonderful sense of time, I mean, maybe that sort of instilled in you that great time feeling. Not that it's like swinging. I mean, he probably didn't swing.
Well, those mills, in their own way, they do, yeah.
No, but I mean, it must have affected you. Did you ever want to pick up a pair of sticks and pound away, or did you do that?
Yeah, well, I didn't really want to, but the little grammar school band, the drummer got in trouble, and they knew about my father being a drummer, and said, well, you can play the drums. My father tried to give me a couple of quick lessons. I couldn't roll or do anything. I was the most miserable drummer. But it got me out of whatever class it was, and it got me out of the schoolroom for a little bit, and I just banged away at maybe I could have got to like it, but I was never a drummer.
I get the feeling you were not terribly thrilled about being in school.
No, I did okay in the grammar. Then I went to a public high school, and the only subject I was pretty good in was English. And math, I was so miserably inept. And in those days, that's when I really started getting into music. And I didn't have a record player. I'd dash home, turn on the radio, and try to get Benny Goodman or Count Basie. And those days, a lot, they had bands, 15 minutes featuring bands, recorded music. And when Guy Lombardo or Blue Baron or Sammy Kaye had come on, I'd switch the dial and I'd keep trying to find things I like, you know.
Ah, that's how I learned, too, was, you know, hearing stuff on the BBC. And they played all the American singers, and they had something with Dinah Shore called The Society of Lower Basin Street.
I think Zero Mostello was a comic on that show.
You're kidding.
I think so. I heard that one.
Well, I heard that in England, so I guess we had sort of a similar way of learning music, because I actually took violin lessons. I didn't like that at all. I just...
Yeah, but you went on. You can not only play the tunes, but you've actually played with symphonies and everything. So yeah.
Yeah, well, I don't want to get into stuff like that, because I keep thinking of what fun it's going to be when you and I play a duet, which we should do any minute.
Shouldn't we have at it then?
Let's have at it. And this is a really good tune by Billy Joel, and it's an old one, but I think it really lends itself to the way we play, Dave. Thank you.
One thing I notice about Dave McKenna and Marion McPartlin is the paint never dries. They are such champions of American popular song, and they do jazz classics, but in just about every concert, every set that I've heard for either of them, they'll always manage to find some more current pop tune and find their way with this song. And wait till you hear what comes next. This is one of the hottest duos I've ever heard. All nine choruses, trading fours, eights, with a little Mozart, Bach, striding, romping, and sounding even a little bit like an old married couple.
I suggest that we play another fast tune because it's a challenge for me to keep up with you. So how about Avalon?
Of course, Marion. Whatever, babe.
What key, dear?
Whatever you want, huh?
E-flat?
You
darling?
Start.
Okay, love. Thank you.
We're going to have more of this dynamic duo in a minute with this real special piano jazz celebrating the life and music of Dave McKenna. I'm Daryl Sherman, and this is Marian McPartland's Piano Jazz. Our program is made possible in part by a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes that a great nation deserves great art. A song couldn't have a better friend than Dave McKenna. But for that matter, McKenna couldn't have a better friend than Marian McPartland. One night, she mentioned to me she'd gone in to hear him at Michael's Pub in New York. Now, his longtime Boston buddy, Dick Johnson, was sitting in on flute and alto that night. Marian had never seen him before, and Marian decided on the spot to record them for her new Halcyon label. It's called Cookin' at Michael's Pub. Dave has this thing. He really loves to string songs together with a theme. And for this recording, the theme was dancing. And this great Cole Porter song that you're about to hear was on the album. And Marian loved it so much, she asked him to do it again, as you'll hear.
This next tune is something that's on the record that you made for Halcyon. The night before, we went to hear Bobby Short, and he did the song. And then at the date, while they were setting up, you fooled around with the song, and you got it together, and it's one of the prettiest things I've ever heard you do, Dream Dancing. Right.
You know, some Cole Porter songs lend themselves better to jazz interpretations than others, and Dream Dancing has always been a kind of inside musician's tune. I remember bass player Frank Tate saying, "Hey, dig these Jimmy Rolls changes." Or, in some cases, people would say, "Let's do the Dave McKenna changes." And On this recording, you can hear how he loves the elegant line and that rich harmony. Another Cole Porter song, Silk Stockings, from The Cole Porter Show, and then they made a movie out of it. He said Dave would talk about how it reminded him of this gypsy tune, Golden Earrings. Dave loved this sort of minor, mystical sound. It was very evocative for him. Even though I pride myself in knowing quite a bit of Cole Porter, I'm ashamed to say I didn't know this song, and it's the first time that I've really heard it played on this program with Marion.
I'm also very intrigued by this tune because I knew there was a show called Silk Stockings, but I didn't really know there was a piece called that. Once in a while, somebody will come up to me and ask for silk stockings, and I think they mean shiny stockings. But now I know that there is a piece called Silk Stockings by Cole Porter, right?
Yep.
Play.
I love what he does with this. And at the end, this is where the composer really tests his mettle, and you get this climactic arch, and that definitely separates the men from the boys in songwriting. And in this particular song, I find it interesting, Silk Stockings, it really has that more of that two-beat feel that people would dance to in these society parties where they played a lot of Dave manages to keep the elegance of this melodic line, which it truly is. He really keeps the integrity of the song, and yet with his unique rhythmic propulsion, makes it swing. I'm going to attempt just to let you hear these lyrics, and because now I'm looking at it and I'm realizing, well, it's probably why I wouldn't have learned this song, because it's Silk Stockings, I Touch Them and Find the Joys That Remind Me of You. So traditionally, most women wouldn't sing this song, but here it goes. Silk stockings, I touch them and find the joys that remind me of you. Silk stockings, they give me again the shine and laughter when they were new. I'm not going to continue because this is in Cole Porter's key and Dave McKenna's key, not mine. But what a wonderful song.
We'll have more in a moment with this special tribute to Dave McKenna. I'm Daryl Sherman, and this is Marian McPartland's Piano Jazz. Now we're going to focus on Dave McKenna, the songwriter. But first, I'd like to share with you this wonderful reminiscence Marian and Dave have on the program about an old musician's hangout, Jim and Andy's, where he brought me as well many years ago. But you're going to hear about something that will lead up to Dave McKenna becoming the songwriter.
You were sitting in the Jim and Andy's, and you were watching the ball game, needless to say. And you had little Steve sitting there beside you on the bar stool.
All right, I don't remember that.
I don't know if he was drinking a double martini, but anyway, a lot of memories, but I don't want to get carried away here because, you know, we came to play, and I would really love to hear you do something you talked about, one of your own tunes, something new.
Okay, well, that aforementioned Steve, my oldest son, he just made me a grandpappy, and there's a daughter named Caitlin, and they call her a cat, and so I'll make a Cat's Cradle.
That's the title of the tune.
Yeah.
Cat's Cradle. Wonderful. Thank you.
Boy, where does the time go? Would you believe Caitlin McKenna just turned 15? And for her birthday, just recently, Steve and his wife brought her to New York. Now, I first met Caitlin some years back when Dave and I were performing at the Algonquin in New York. And boy, she may have been a cat in the cradle then, but if you could see her now, she's quite the young lady. Steve shared with me that when he and his brother Doug were kids growing up, they really didn't have a sense of just how famous Dave was. Of course, neither did Dave, always being so unassuming. He was just Dad going off to work like other dads. But I did notice in the course of our chat that Steve would just offhandedly mention songs and his reactions to musicians that truly reflected having been in a rarefied musical atmosphere. Not to mention baseball.
Well, when did you start being such a fan of the Red Sox? Was that when you were quite young also?
Yeah, about 7 years old, maybe.
Oh, my God.
Eight, maybe.
Well, you know, you were telling me before the show that you wrote a tune for Ted Williams.
Yeah, it's dedicated to Ted Williams, my boyhood idol. And anyway, I don't know whether to call it Theodore or the Thumper. They used to call him the Thumper, one of his many nicknames. And one little girl I read in a story about Ted, one little girl called him Teddy Ballgames. So, you know.
Oh, I like Teddy Ballgame.
Whatever.
Go ahead, play that. Wonderful.
That song is so catchy, and I love the way Marion says, Teddy Ballgame. After the tune, of course, she just remarked to Dave how catchy it was and how it was just screaming for a lyric, to which Dave responded, yeah, I'd love for Dave Frischberg to write something. He writes such great songs, and of course, he's so busy. So I thought I might try my hand at it. I came up with, I don't know if this will be the definitive lyric for Teddy Ballgame, but it's a start. And I thought, why not sing it along with Dave? Of course, it's not in my key, but that'll make it all the more poignant.
There goes Teddy Ballgame, stepping up to the plate, pitcher winding up, making ready to seal his fate. He glares and then he throws to Teddy Ballgame, curveball should make the mark. To his chagrin, it is over the shoulder, sailing through the park. That green monster is clearing way over the wall. That ball is gone. Oh, the fans are cheering. Yay for Chatty Ball Game. Splendid Splinter he. Sometimes he's concealed playing out in left field. He's still our MVP.
Thank goodness Dave hung around long enough to watch the Red Sox win that series game just last fall. And Fenway Park announced his passing later that week. Well, there's more to come with this special tribute to Dave McKenna. I'm Daryl Sherman, and this is Marian McPartland's Piano Jazz. Our program is made possible in part by Friends of Piano Jazz and is a production of South Carolina ETV and Radio. Marian has always been a steadfast champion of Alec Wilder, and they were great friends. He was known as a brilliant curmudgeon and wrote some great standards, as you'll hear.
I would love to hear you play an Alec Wilder song, and I know what you're going to say, that Alec is so fussy about the harmony, and he is, but if I were going to worry about something like that, I guess I never would have made an album of his tunes, because I'm afraid I changed a lot of the harmony. I said to him, as a matter of fact, well, if you want it to sound like a brill building performance, go get one of those piano players. You know, we got into a big thing about it. So, but he's gotten very mellow about all that.
I hope so, Marian.
Because I think that you can feel free to do any of his tunes that you want to do, and do it your way. I think that's what he'd like to hear, actually, would be, I'll Be Around, done your way. Okay?
Okay, but there's no outlandish chord changes, you know, but I forget what the originals were now. But
well, it's so long ago that they should be changed.
Okay.
just for my own curiosity, just play the first few bars again, will you? See? You changed key already.
I don't know that tune. I just love it.
Famous last words. I don't know the tune. I just love it, says he as he plays it exquisitely.
Oh, God, there it is. A perfect Dave-ism. He's always saying stuff like that, even if he's recorded the song a million times. He was a curmudgeon, kind of like Alec Wilder, and he would complain about having to put on his glasses to read, but he always did a great job. Now we're going to focus on Dave McKenna as an accompanist. Now, he admittedly loved playing with horn players, a couple of horns in a group in a full rhythm section, but he did love singers, and we loved him. He was so generous on his gigs. He would invite you up to sit in with him. And the times together when we've performed, I like to have fun trying to lighten him up, because Dave, as an entertainer, is kind of the furthest thing from his essence. And it was kind of fun to trick him into thinking I couldn't remember a lyric. I would look at him desperately for a cue, and he was such a good sport about it, as he'd shout out, "Cotton, pencils, glue." As much as Dave loved Schwartz and Dietsch songs, this one, which I started at the beginning of the show, was probably not a favorite of his, but he still treated it with integrity and sure made it swing. I can't swing like he did, but I'm going to continue it and have to remember the cotton, pencils, and glue all by myself. And the title will be self-evident.
Copper comes from Arizona. Peaches come from Georgia. And lobsters come from Maine. The wheat fields are the sweet fields of Nebraska. And Kansas gets molasses from the grain. Old whiskey comes from old Kentucky. Ain't the country lucky? New Jersey gives us glue. And you come from Rhode Island. And little old Rhode Island is famous for you. Cotton comes from Louisiana, gophers from Montana, and spuds from Idaho. They plow lands in the cowlands of Missouri, where most beef made for roast beef seems to grow. Grand Canyons come from Colorado, gold comes from Nevada, divorces also do. And you come from Rhode Island, and little old Rhode Island is famous for you. Pencils come from Pennsylvania, a vest from West Virginia, and chants from Chantecy. And they know mink where they grow mink in Wyoming. A cow chair in New Hampshire, that's for me. And minnows come from Minnesota. Coats come from Dakota. Why should you be blue? For you come from Rhode Island. Don't let them ride Rhode Island. It's famous for you.
Well, Dave McKenna may be our claim to fame, but with a fan base like his, you can tell he really belongs to the world. All this reverence towards Dave seems somewhat ironic, as I mentioned before, considering his nature and his persona. He may not have been an angel, but there was this sweet pureness to him, and I think that, I don't know, that just had its appeal along with his music. He was a really low-key kind of guy, not necessarily known for the gift of gab. Of course, unless it's sports or crossword puzzles. He loved mystery novels, and of course he loved Italian food. His son was just telling me how he'd go on at length about how really great tomato sauce should be of thin consistency. But hardly have I ever heard Dave talk about himself in relation to his music as much as he has with Marion. I can't tell you how much I've enjoyed sharing these programs and the stories and just being in the company of two of my great musical heroes. What a great way to wind up this program with 20 of the most dexterous digits on the planet playing Let's Get Away From It All. Here's Marion and Dave.
Thank you.
Well, didn't you like that? I did.
Yeah, I did.
It felt good. Let's get a gig.
You've been listening to Piano Jazz with Marion McPartland and guest host Daryl Sherman, and a special tribute to Dave McKenna. This program featured excerpts from piano jazz programs in 1979 and in 1994, when Dave was Marion's guest. Piano Jazz is a production of South Carolina ETV Radio. The producer is Sherry Hutchinson, recording engineer Duke Marcos, assistant recording engineer Tae Kim, mastering engineer David Mitchell, engineering intern Dale Anderson, production coordinator David Lyon. The executive producer is Elaine Freeman. Support for Piano Jazz comes from Save America's Treasures through a partnership between the National Endowment for the Arts and the National Park Service Department of the Interior. Portions of our program were from early seasons of Piano Jazz, made possible by Exxon Corporation. If you wish to contact us, our email address is pj@scetv.org. Our postal address is 1041 George Rogers Boulevard, Columbia, South Carolina, 29201. To learn more about the artists and music selections heard on Piano Jazz, or to listen to a recent program, visit our website, pianojazz.npr.org. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and NPR. Contributors include the Pew Charitable Trusts, analyzing challenges facing the housing market and working to identify solutions at pewtrusts.org. And Post, maker of Post Shredded Wheat, 100% whole grain, no sugar or salt added. Recipes at postshreddedwheat.com. This is NPR.